give me the opportunity to talk here. And well, this is joint work with Pereira and also in Barcelona and Fred Baron in COM. And well, of course, we don't represent every asset semi-group at semi-group projection of sister assets. It's an attempt of doing something like along these lines. So, well, part of the motivation it comes both from pure algebra and from sister algebras. And the sister part is, of course, that K0 is a part of the invariant that's being used or has been used for classification, and it's constructed out of this monad, which, well, I'll speak of monads or semigroups, but for me a monad is a semigroup with identity. And that's, which is V of A, which is constructed by using the Murray Neumann equivalence classes of projections in matrices over the algebra. Okay, so in general, the in principle, the only property that this semigroup will have is that it's conical. Okay. Which means that two elements only add up to zero if and only if they are zero. And if the algebra has a unit, then you have the extra property that it has no unit. But in general, it's only a conical monad. And if we restrict to the class of sister algebras with rearrange zero, then it follows from the work of Jan and a little bit more that it also has this property which is called refinement, okay? Which means that if you have the composition of one projection in two different decompositions, they admit a common refinement. And that, in terms of the monad, is phrased like this. So if you have a decomposition in the monad of one element, of two ways of decomposing this element, then you can find this Vij such that you have this so-called sometimes refinement matrix, and this to the red that the columns add up to x1, x2, and the rows are y1 and y2.
You don't need simplicity?
What's that?
You don't need simplicity of the algebra?
No, that's general. Yeah, just rearrange your implies this. So in particular, this implies risk decomposition. But the converse is true if you have cancellation. But in general, and for general semigroups, you don't have that. So real and zero algebra satisfy this. So we could ask the following. So which conical refinement monads appear as semigroups of projections for sister algebras with real and zero? Okay. And well, there's a machinery which was developed in pure ring theory, which is worth at least noticing. And this goes along way back in the mid 70s, and it was done by George Bergman. And he proved that if you have any conical monad with an order unit, you can always find a ring, just, okay, whose V of R is isomorphic to this monad. And here, V of R is the monad of isomorphism classes of finally generated projective modules. Okay. And there's no sister version to this, at least I don't know of any sister version to this. So. But even in the purely algebraic case, it is of interest, we would like to determine, for example, which conical refinement monads can be representable as special types of rings. This is also a problem in pure algebra, which are the so-called von Neumann regular rings. And these are known to have this refinement property as well. And this is not known, but what is known is that the size of this monad is important. So size matters. Because you can find, Baron constructed a conical refinement monad of size Aleph 2, which cannot be representable. So there's no...
What size Aleph 2 really means with respect to Aleph 1?
With the next cardinal on Aleph 1, I suppose. Second on cardinal, I suppose.
One on Aleph 2,
no? Yeah. So anyway, because we also want to restrict somehow to get things which are separable, so we should be looking, being more modest to the contour case. So what conical contour refinement monads can be represented for A with rearrange zero, for example? Okay. Well, we still don't know the answer to this, but there's a good test class, which is the class of graph algebras, which provide us with some possibility of constructing examples. And, well, I just remind of the definitions. If we have a graph which consists of a set of vertices and edges and range and source maps which assign to each edge the source vertex and the range vertex in the usual way, we take this to be countable and also row finite, which means that every vertex emits finally many edges at most. Okay. And then the graph sister algebra associated to this graph can be constructed, well, it's constructed as a sister algebra generated by a family of projections on partial isometries, the so-called universal Kunz-Kregel family. So you have pairwise orthogonal projections which are indexed by the vertices, the CPDs, and partial isometries indexed by the edges, FEs, and they satisfy these two relations. So S E star F E is the projection of the range vertex, and whenever this is non-empty, so this is another thing, you have that PV is the sum of the corresponding projections. Okay, so, well, the interesting thing about this is that, well, their K-theory and K0 and K1 have been computed, and they can be computed in terms of the graph. Okay, but it appears that the projection monad associated to this type of algebras hasn't been computed. Well, it has been computed, but not in the papers, at least, where the K-theory was computed. So we can look at the graph monad that one can define given a row finite graph. So all graphs are row finite. And so we somehow mimic what we would like to have because of the relations. So the relations would give us that a projection on a vertex D is equal to the sum of S D S star, right? So we would like to have this in the monad. This is a relation that's going to have to be to hold in the monad. So given a row finite graph, we can define a graph monad which is has some generators. So the generators are, well, this notation is not very good. So that's, for every vertex you have a generator, it's not that you have two sets of generators. So for every vertex you have a generator. And then for every vertex that emits edges, you just say, well, okay, AB is going to be the sum of the vertices of the generators corresponding to the range of the edges that B emits. And that's a finite sum because the graph is all finite. So that defines a monad. Okay. And well, for example, if we have this graph here, so that's one loop and one edge, so this just has two generators AB, and then A is equal to A plus B. That's the only relation that we have. And in this case, well, this can be identified with a copy of the natural numbers including zero and a copy of the natural numbers. And the correspondence would be that A is sent to, well, this copy, which I just put primes to this thing on this copy, and B is sent to this one. And 1 prime plus 1 is 1 prime, that's the addition rule. And in fact, well, this MOP, this graph monad, is a projection monad of the depth function. Okay, so these graph monads are important because, because as Arap, Moreno, and Pardo proved, is that for a monad, for a row finite graph, you have this natural monad homomorphism, which sends each generator to the corresponding projection indexing the vertex, so the class of this projection. And this natural homomorphism turns out to be an isomorphism in general. So the graph monad somehow is computable. The monad of projections of the sister algebra is computable in terms of the monad associated to the graph. And moreover, the nice property is that regardless of whether you have real and zero or not, the graph monad is always a refinement monad for a row finite graph, always. And it also satisfies, we won't need this, but it's nice to know, it satisfies some weak cancellation condition, what is called the separativity cancellation condition, which means that whenever you want to cancel something from a direct sum, You can do it if you know that the size of the element you want to cancel is comparable to the size of the other two elements. So we have a good, a nice class of monads which are always refinement, they are always comparable, and they come, well, they come from sister algebras that have real M0 when the graph has an extra nice property, which is the condition case. So this was studied in U2, and a sister algebra, a graph sister algebra is real M0 whenever you pick a vertex, there's either no cycle on this vertex, and there's one cycle that goes through this vertex, there's at least two cycles. So at least we know things in terms of the combinatorial properties of the graph, which is what one plans to use. Okay, so now we can shift a bit the question and ask, forgetting a bit about the real and zero question, which countable refinement monads are going to be isomorphic to some graph monad. Okay, and then you worry about the graph, but first you'd like to have this coming from a graph. And we also restrict attention to finally generated monads just. And what's, well, the reason is because in the non-finally generated case we don't know what to do, so we do the finally generated case. So for example, and that's more or less the history of how we started looking at this. So you look at some simple-minded graph like this one, for example. So you get the monad is generated by three guys, and P equals P plus A plus B, that's the relation. So this is not a partially ordered monad, well, just because you can have P is less than or equal to P plus A, which is less than or equal to P plus A plus B, and this is again P, and P is not equal to P plus A. So it's not partially ordered. Okay. But each anti-symmetrization, which means that you make the things which are not partially ordered, you make them partially ordered. So you define, so P is less than P plus A, is less than P, and they are not equal, so you define a congruence to make these things equal. You quotient this by the congruence, and you get these other ones, M0. Which has three generators, and then this has this other relation. So P now is equal to P plus A, and P is also equal to P plus A. Still finally generated, still refinement, and still conical. And, well, I shouldn't have called it a theorem, but just a dilemma. But anyways, M0, one can prove that it's not a graph monad. So we have this M0, which is going to play a role later. So this is generated by this three. And this is not a graph monad. And then, well, the next example we looked was this other example, which is also simple in a way. So you take just the natural numbers with usual addition, with an infinity element attached and usual addition. So infinity absorbs everything, and it's idempotent. And now, well, one tries to look at to see whether one can represent this with a graph, you play around with some arrows and vertices, and we came up with this graph, which looks quite okay. I mean, you have three generators, or say A, B, and 1, let's call it something like these relations, and then one can observe that, for example, A plus B is idempotent, so twice A plus B is A plus B, so this would play a role of infinity, and this A plus B absorbs A, so this looks like it's going to be that infinity. So you can in fact define morphisms from here to here by sending 1 to 1 and infinity to A plus B, and you can define a morphism the other way back. But it doesn't work. So you have one composition is the identity, but the other composition is not the identity. So you can, in fact, well, this is called the retract that you have this kind of like in the box, right? So this is almost a graph monad with E finite, but it's not quite. So then you can ask, well, is it possible to construct this with changing maybe the graph, putting some more vertices and edges around, and get that you get exactly this monad? I mean, this is a very simple thing, so one should be able to decide. And The answer is that, well, it's sad in a way because it's not a graph monoid for any finite graph. And well, this illustrates a bit of the techniques that are used depending in our main result, so I can sketch a bit how it works. And it's kind of, well, it's kind of nice in a way. So if one supposes otherwise, so you have a finite graph and an isomorphism of this graph monoid with G infinity, then, well, you can label the vertices that are mapped to finite integers and the vertices that are mapped to infinite integers. Okay, and everything is finite, so you have two finite sets. And then you have to care about the edges between these two vertices, because this is a little bit combinatorial kind of thing. So you label the edges that go from xi to some other xi, and you count how many of these are. So there's some alpha ii prime, some finite number. Then you do the same for the y's. Okay, so the x's are the ones that are, that go, these ones are the ones that go to finite integers, these ones are the ones that go to infinity. You label these ones and count how many are there, and then you count how many are from the y's to the x's. And there's no need to worry about how many are from the x's to the y's because the morphism is to set infinity. So that would give a contradiction, so there's no need to care about those. So then this gives, because the graph is finite, we only have x's and y's, because you have an isomorphism, this gives a presentation, which is given, it's a kind of a linear algebra thing, right? So you have x's are combinations of the other x's, according to the arrows that go from one x to another x, and the y's have x's, the y's have arrows to the other y's, and you also have two arrows from the y's to the x's, so you get this other thing. And, well, of course, we don't want to carry all these things, so we just write it matricially. So you get x0 is equal to a matrix times x0, and y0 is by0 plus cy0, where b is the betas, c is the gammas, and a is the alphas. And all these are integer valued matrices, okay? And x0 is an integer value. You can think of an integer value column, and y0 is the guys that go to infinity. Okay. So, okay, can you have this now? This is the problem. And it's somehow quite simple. And the answer is, of course, no, you cannot have this. And the kind of thing that one uses is the following dilemma. So, suppose you have an abelian group, and you would have column vectors in this abelian group that satisfy this Dagger relation. Okay, so the other relation here. Okay? So you have this relation in some abelian group. Now the x's and the y's come from this thing. And then the only possibility is that you have that x and y are both zero. And why is this? Well, because of our assumption, this thing, this Dagger, gives us a presentation of this monoid inside the group. And therefore Z infinity would fit inside this group. And this would imply that you have the relations are to be satisfying the group. And if this holds in a group, you just cancel. You get everything with zero. Okay, so this is not possible. And if one can just choose any group, then now we choose, for example, Q and X equal to zero, and then the dilemma implies that you can only have one y which satisfies y equal to by, because this is the fallacy relation which is remaining. Okay, and then you get that this implies that this matrix is invertible. So this is basically some elementary algebra arguments. And now if one plays with this fact, if we put that the original presentation gives this relation with x0 integers and this is non-zero, then you put some suitable y, and you get that this y will satisfy the other relation. So you get that this is satisfied in an abelian group, and in fact in Q, which is not possible. Okay, so we get a contradiction. And that is, this argument is used in some of our results, so it gives an idea of how, I mean, the techniques are being used. Okay, so Z infinity is not a graph monoid for any finite graph, and And if you have a graph monad, you make some funny construction, you may end up with something which is not a graph monad, so it looks, it doesn't look very, very good so far. But we can make it look good somehow, I mean, by playing with these examples. And for this one, I need some definitions. And the first is the definition of a prime element in a monad. And this is an element which is, well, it's non-zero. This is not the original definition, but for the context, we can just work with this. So it's a non-zero element, and it's an element which, if it sits below a sum of two things, then it has to sit below one of them. Okay? And then the monad is primely generated, the very element is a sum of primes. So for example, the only prime integer is one. And in here, in that infinity, then you have also infinity, which is also prime. So, and this monad is primely generated. And that's a result by Brookfield, well, he's a monad theorist, and he proved that if you have a refinement monad, which is one of these candidates to become a projection monad for something with real and zero, which is also finally generated, then it's automatically primely generated. So prime elements in the finally generated case play a role. And every element, in fact, satisfies this lesser dichotomy. Every element is regular, which in the partially ordered case means every element is idempotent, so 2x is equal to 2x, or it's free in this sense. Okay. So once you know that, for example, not all graph monads are going to be primely generated. Okay, so for example, if you take this monad, so P0, well, this graph, and then you take this graph, this one, and so on. Okay, one can check, I mean, in this case, the monad you have is generated by A and all these PIs, and you have that C0 is P1 plus A, C1 is P2 plus A, and so on. So you have the monad generated by these things. One can check that this guy is prime, and it's the only prime. So this, and you need all the other generators, so this is not primely generated. So restricting to this class, I mean, leaves out some graph monads somehow. So you won't be able to represent everything, but still.
This 2x less than equal to x.
You are
saying 2x less than equal to x.
Yeah, 2x less than equal to x means that you have this in the same group, which you can have. So for example, in here, you have this. What's that?
The alphabets are exactly the same, you know? Okay.
Well, this order means the algebraic order. I mean, in every semigroup you have an order which is given by complements. So x less than or equal to y, if we can find something which added to x gives you y.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's... Well, it's equal. I mean, in general, it can be less than or equal to. Depends. I mean, in the partially ordered case, which is the case that we're going to care about also, because in the non-partially ordered case, we don't know what to do. So we get equality, because x is always less than or equal to 2x, and then in this case, you get equality. So every element is either regular, which means idempotent in that case, or free. Okay, and just for the purpose of stating the theorem, one needs this extra definition. So, for every prime, you can look at the primes which sit below in the order of this element. Okay, so the elements that are below in the order are different from it. And we look at the three primes that are below and just one layer below, so there's nobody in between. So that's the L3 thing. So you look at the primes, which are just one layer, and there's nobody in between, no prime in between. And this is, I mean, this set turned out to characterize what's going on. And that's the result. And the result says that if you have a finally generated refinement monad, which is also partially ordered, then and it's a draft money exactly when this combinatorial condition holds. So whenever you have a pre-prime, the set of pre-primes below this element is either zero or there's only one or none. Okay? And as a corollary, then we get that this form, for example, this is a graph monoid. Because there's only one pre-prime, which is one, and there's no primes below.
So what exactly is a graph
monoid? A graph monoid is, you have your row finder graph, and
that's
what thing
that you originally
designed. What's that?
If you worry about
normally
the multi-passing projections of
those graphs. Yeah. So the graph monoid, you look at the edges that these things give, and then so B, then you make this equivalent to this. Okay, and if it doesn't look, then you ask it, for example. And if you look at the sister algebra generated by this, the projection monoid is the graph monoid. So that's why somehow they are interesting in this context. Okay. So this applies to this case. I mean, you know that for every three prime, there's the set below the three prime is controlled. And this doesn't cover all graph monoids, because you can take also, for example, this one, so vertices, okay, and then arrows, and like this. And this gives a graph monoid, so a graph sister algebra, okay. But all these primes are free, in fact, and P1 is bigger than P2, bigger than P3. Because P2, well, if we get P1, it's P1 plus P2, no? So this is bigger than P2. So, and so on, right? So for three primes, you have things lying below, so it's not covered by this one. Nevertheless, you have some property. Okay, so I'd like to comment a bit on the proof, because then this is also a way of saying it's quite constructive. And that's why somehow you're given some semigroup. You'd like to see what the sister algebra corresponding to that semigroup. You can actually construct a graph. And this is the how we actually work this is to look first at the corollary. So we first prove the corollary, and then we prove the theorem. Because, well, for one thing, it's easier. Well, for the proof first, for one of the implications, one needs to define what an ideal of a monoid is, and an ideal of a semigroup is just a subset which satisfies this condition. So a sum of two elements is in I, if and only if both of them are in I, and this allows you to define a congruence, okay, by doing like this. So M mod I is M modulo its congruence. So two elements are equivalent if they are equal after adding something from the ideal. And this something may not be the same thing, so it might be different. What is known is that the class of graph monoids is closed under ideals and quotient. So if you take ideals of a graph monoid, then you also have a graph monoid, and if you take a quotient, then you also get a graph monoid. So the thing is that if we use this to prove that one implies two, so one supposes that the given monoid comes from a graph, so it's a projection monoid from sister algebra. And then suppose two doesn't happen, and that means that one is able to find some p which is free and satisfies this thing. So that means that below this p there lie two elements which are different from p. Okay? At least two. Okay? They are different and they are just one layer below. There's nothing in between. And now, well, this is a bit of fiddling around with these equations. So if you write P as A plus something, then the fact that P is prime tells you that P has to be less than or equal to one of these things. And it's not compared to A, so it has to be less than or equal to A prime. And in fact, then playing with the fact that the order is partial, you get this equation. Okay? So in fact, this element which is below P has P as a complement inside P. And what does the same with B? And this means that, that this guy contains a copy of this moment. We have this P, you have A and B, which is the law and satisfy this relationship. Okay. Which, first example we show, it's not a graph moment. So if this thing were an ideal of the original graph, we would be done, because graph condition goes down to ideals. Okay. But this in general is not an ideal, so one has to turn it into some situation where we can use this. So in fact it's a quotient of some ideal. So if, well, that's just the argument that one can show. If you look at the ideal which is generated by this distinguished thing, so the set of elements that lie below multiples of this P, then this is an ideal then, easy to check, and it contains an ideal which is this other element. So the elements are not bigger than A and B. So then it takes some work to show that in fact, well, M0 is inside M, it is easy because the elements in M0 are just below P, and you can map M0 to a portion, so it's just include here and not out by this thing. So you have some motion, which in fact is an element. So that's some technical work, but one can fully. So this implies, because this is not a graph monoid, this is not going to be a graph monoid, therefore N is not a graph monoid, because it's a quotient, and because it's a quotient, sorry, N is not a graph monoid, and then N being an ideal, which implies that N is not a graph monoid. So we prove that if 2 is not true, then 1 is not true either. Now for the converse implication, which I think is maybe the most interesting somehow, is that you're given this monetary sign, this condition, you want to construct a graph. So, and that's a constructive process. So how would you do it for this Z infinity? So for Z infinity, how one would construct a graph, which cannot be finite, that we know this. So well, this took like, 2 weeks of trying to draw arrows in various directions. And it didn't quite work until in the end there was some very complicated graph that we were able then to simplify, and I can draw it here. So that's not the original graph. The original graph was worse. But you can get this thing. So you get one thing and then all the other things are connected. This means there's an arrow from here to here, another arrow from here to here, and there's arrows, I don't know if you can see where they point to, but there's an arrow this way, two arrows this way, and then it keeps repeating in a pattern. And it's an infinite arrow. It's not so clear, is it? So there's an arrow from, well, there's an arrow from B0 to B2, there's an arrow from two arrows from B3 to B1, an arrow from 2 from 2 with 4, and
yes.
Yeah.
If you look, you can see the
reflection
of the
door. Yeah. I got the point, yeah. Okay, so that's what? You can also decide which direction from here, because this. Yeah, there's an arrow. Yeah. So B0 emits an arrow to itself, to B1, to B2, and to A. Okay, and same. So that's some of the equations that you have. And, well, this allows us to define, for example, a morphism from here to Z infinity by sending this guy to 1, and this all the other things. And this is going to be surjective, it's very easy to see. And now to prove, if one wants to prove this is 1-to-1, then it is enough to show that you actually have these relations for all n. So in fact, we want to see that this relation in fact collapses all to one single relation that, or well, maybe two, that's the one that the infinity is defined by. Okay. And how do we show this? Well, typically, because of these monads have this separativity condition, this graph monads, they can always be embedded, and this is something that it's well-known to semi-group theorists, apparently, but not to other people, at least not to me. So you can always embed this into a product of abelian groups union infinity. So it's always possible. If you have a separative monad, so satisfy this weak cancellation condition, you can always embed this in a product of some groups together with infinity. And the addition here is the typical, I mean, the expected one. So, to prove this one-to-one, you embed this monad here, and you want to prove this here, and then go back. Okay, and that's the idea. So this thing can be embedded in here. All the G's are abelian groups, and they have this correlation. So we can just, concentrate on one abelian group, and suppose that you have this infinite collection of things which lie in this abelian group, union infinity, and they satisfy this nice set of equations, what nice or not so nice. Okay, and then you want to conclude that A plus B0 is B0, all the Bn's are equal, and they are B0 is an infinity element. Why don't put it? And then, well, if we write, that's not the usual notation, but if we write X equivalent to Y or comparable to Y, to mean that X can be compared to Y in some way, and Y can be compared to X, then if you look, well, let's just go back again. So from here you have that B0 is bigger than B1, and from here you have that B1 is also bigger than B0, so B1 and B0 are comparable. They need not be equal because we don't know yet that this is going to be partially ordered, but they are comparable. And the same here, so B2 is bigger than B1, and B1 is bigger than B2, somewhere here. Yeah. So it follows from all these relations that all these B's are going to be comparable. And this means that when you map this thing into this product, if one B happens to be infinite, then all of them will be infinite. Okay, because they are all comparable. And if all of the B's are infinite, then it's very easy to check that it's going to hold, right? You add infinite to something with infinite, everything is infinite, so there's no work. So in the end, everything is trivial somehow. But it's not so trivial to construct the graph. So that's. So what if one is finite, then all of them are going to be finite, and all of them are going to lie in the group, okay? And then you have to worry about what happens with this extra A. And this is where this A plays some role. Okay, so we may assume that all the BIs lie in this group, and then you have this first equation, which I just reproduce here again. So this implies that A cannot be infinite, because otherwise it would be zero infinite. So this implies that A is in the group, and then you can start cancelling out things and work your way. So for example, we can cancel the zero here and get this extra equation, and then the second equation, which is this, everything is in the group, we can cancel, and then we get this extra equation, and this together with this implies that A is zero. Then the third and fourth equations, you can do the same thing, cancel things out, and you get this equal to zero, because this equal to zero, and this to compare gives B1 equal to zero, and look at the second set of equations. Similarly, you get B2 equal to zero, so you get B2, B1, zero, and then you go here, and then you get B0, zero. And keep working. If you keep working in this way, you find that everything is zero, A and B, and in this group, not in the monad, but in the group. And then, again, if this is zero, then relations 0,1 are always satisfied without any extra work. Okay, so in particular, if we go back here, we see that this thing can be represented by this graph, and this graph satisfies condition K. So this comes from separable sister algebra with Riemann 0. But in general, I mean, if you have this extra, I mean, in general, for another type of monad which satisfies this condition on the primes, so this satisfies this condition in this case, I mean, this is a prime element. We don't know, I mean, what conditions are in the graph. Maybe you can represent it, but can you tell whether the graph is going to satisfy condition K? This we don't know. There's some guess that one might have, but still some control on how the the graph, I mean, on some condition on the prime, this extra condition on this prime element, but may allow the graph to have condition, this condition, okay. Another thing is that, in fact, I mean, since we start proving the corollary, how does one prove the theorem? Well, more or less, all that you need is here, which is kind of surprising. I mean, this simple example gives you the whole thing. I mean, well, I'm sort of lying, of course, because otherwise this would be... I find it quite... Well, maybe it's trivial, I don't know. But in general, what you do is you separate... Your monad can have all sorts of stuff, but the primes which are regular...
So you have to distinguish some different type of primes, and you will have...
I'm not going to give the proof because that's worse, there's more relations to worry about, but
you will have primes which are regular, so they look like this, 2p or 2p, and primes which are not regular, so they are free. So you have these two types of primes. You have these two types. So for the free primes, you have to do something. And for the regular primes, which look like infinite, you look at the free primes that lie below. There's a finite number of these because everything is finitely generated. And for each thing, if you have just one prime line below, this looks like Z infinity, and you play this kind of trick. And then one assembles everything together to get a graph, which is...
Well, it doesn't look so nice, but it also gives you a graph. So that's the general idea. Okay, so... So when, as I said, so this gives this condition, this question. So, see, one has the possibility of representing M as a graph monad. When can we find a graph which actually satisfies condition K? This would be nice because this would give you a sister algebra with real zero. And even if you cannot do this, even if E does not satisfy this condition K, that's not saying that. I mean, the graph sister algebra will not have real round zero, but maybe there's some graph algebra that has real round zero and still gives the same monad. So that's another question that one could be asking. And well, finally, I mean, we've done this in the case where the monad is partially ordered, so the order is partial. What can you say in general? I mean, can you, given any monad which is finally generated still and have this nice refinement in the composition property, can one find some sister algebra depending on the prime structure? So this we don't know. And yeah, I think I'll stop here. Thank you.
Zero. So that's natural numbers together with zero
and infinite.
Zero. Here's a word.
And zero does not include zero.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Zero plus infinity is also infinite.
I didn't quite catch whether you mentioned the notion of decomposition, inductive limit decomposition of the given Kalman.
It's not a positive cone. I guess, yeah, but, well, to be, it's not controversial.
Of course, but not to this thing could be deduced, and that's my suggestion is, could there be an across handle in general inductive limit because of
call for a general type of constable requirement thing?
No, it's going to be for some interesting class of, in other words, you have the alternative of, if you could do that, or decompose it in terms of simpler ones, then you could have the, possibly, you wouldn't have to construct your C-star algebra all at once, you could do that step by step, and then but if you can't get the decomposition, then the general thing.
At least what you can do is, as what this was in this paper with Mikkel that we had, you can map it at the mention monad onto your refinement monad. And just countable, this is the only thing you need.
Okay.
And this one has a limit.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if you can do this just at the level of the,
well,
on the refinement monad.
Okay, in other words, if that has a limit, the decomposition, you look at the image of that inside your given one, and then the properties, the building blocks don't have simple enough properties to work with.
The other question will be, well, you can represent that and then lift everything.
Of course, everything is a limit of finite degenerate.
Yeah.
But maybe you're looking at
the
finite
degenerate
ones anyway.
Yeah. Sure enough.